Chapter 22. The vagrant sees his chance. Delta is advancing on Beta, furious, her hands pointing at Rila, then spreading to encompass everything before stabbing towards Beta again. The other immortal backs away, his replies uncertain. Clearly Beta is touched by her argument, his nature making him listen and consider before refuting. Mazar remains on her knees, doing her best to stay small. Briefly, the vagrant looks at the girl lying on the floor, cradling the arm that Beta touched. Her face is screwed tight with pain, and his own creases in sympathy before turning back to Beta. The immortal is on the defensive, distracted by Delta. Circling round, trying to keep out of Beta's eyeline and the eyeline of his living sword, the vagrant advances. He moves closer, getting within a few paces of his weapon's reach. Carefully he goes, carefully. Then a sudden rush of movement, a step, two, pulling back Delta's sword, singing out, swinging hard for Beta's unguarded back. Beta's sword notices too late, its eyes swiveling in shock, transmitting the warning to Beta via their essence link. There is the beginning of the motion that would become a parry if there were just a few more precious seconds. But Delta's sword does not ring with the vagrant's song, the blade stiff in his hands. It holds itself rigid so that the sound smacks dully along it, sapping the energy. Silver wings strain against his swing, forcing the vagrant to drag it down. When the blow lands, it is without force. A tap on the back, impolite. The vagrant has time to look surprised, then angry at Delta's sword before Beta has turned, his own blade rising with indignation. Delta tries to intervene, reaching out to her brother, her hand cupping his face, guiding it back. Whatever she is about to say is cut off, however, the palace shaking from multiple impacts. There is a pause, long enough to register the vibrations in the floor and wonder what causes them, and then there is a groan from outside. A not-quite-human sound that comes from the walls and the agents that bond buildings together, stretched, tortured. Slowly at first, the vagrant begins to slide away from Beta. He frowns, looking down at innocent feet. As his momentum increases, the vagrant leans forward, arms waving for balance. Something is pulling at the Sky Palace, rotating it. The floor tilts dramatically, becoming a hill, steep. Beta and Delta automatically step up, their wings holding them stationary as everything revolves around them. The vagrant is not so lucky. He flails, falls onto his front. There is nothing to grab onto, but the toes of his boots squeak on the polished floor, finding purchase. Mazar spreads herself flat, an armoured starfish sliding slowly away. Rila rolls past him. He misses her, but she manages to get hold of his ankle, causing them both to slip a few more feet. Briefly, the floor tilts back again, not quite level, but enough for the vagrant to stand. He helps Rila up. Sweat runs cold on her face, one arm pressed close to her side, a few wisps still smoking up from the back of her hand. Delta and Beta turn together towards the wall, both appearing to see something shocking. The vagrant looks the same way, squinting, Rila copying. They see nothing strange about the wall. It is as it has always been, a smooth canvas decorated in silver. Miniature figures remain as they were, innocent, frozen in their telling of ancient history. Beta and Delta continue to stare, and so the vagrant and Rila continue as well. He is about to turn away when there is a boom, loud and close, and the head of a bone lance erupts into the hallway. A sharp cone, like a giant arrowhead, 5 feet across. As they watch, four lines become visible along its length, allowing the cone to split apart, anchoring itself to the wall. A dark tunnel is revealed in its centre that appears the bastard child of a chute and a throat, lined in muscle and grey flesh. Rila grips the vagrant's hand a little harder. The tunnel convulses, the end they can see braced firmly as the rest of it bucks. A gurgling, retching noise bubbles from the depths, and then it spits out a body onto the floor. It is one of the stilted warriors from Slake. As she hauls herself upright, another of their number is disgorged, then another, the hallway rapidly filling with slime-covered fighters, armed and ready. Around Beta, the air begins to hum. He points his sword at the tunnel and, with a single beat of his wings, surges towards it. Blue light crackles into being, forming a nimbus that covers Beta from the tip of his sword to the top of his shoulders, as wide as his wings at the base. Partway through the charge, Delta's hand flashes out, hard fingers locking about a silver ankle. She pivots in the air, taking the power of Beta's movement, transferring it sideways so that he completes a rapid orbit of her, a sparking, singing satellite. Delta lets go, launching her brother down the hallway. It is a brief flight, followed by an impressive crash. Instantly, Delta gives chase, leaving the Vagrant, Mazar, Rila, and the warriors alone. They share a look before heading off in the opposite direction. Vesper pauses by a window, looking out on the battle taking place across the Sky Palace. Wonderland has come alongside now, multicoloured tower tops peeking over the battlements of Alpha's palace. Though the living city is lower down, it is not out of reach. Many of the city's vertebrae legs have curled upwards, snake-like, to reach up, puncturing the sides of the palace. As more and more attach themselves, they begin to flex together, pulling the palace down to Wonderland's level. The great engines of the Sky Palace pull back, making everything shake, alarming, managing to lock it in the air at a strange angle. Turning from the window, Vesper rushes on, stepping out into the open. With the palace off balance, people roll like bits of litter, scattering downwards. A lucky few dangle from pillars or posts, or dive into nearby doorways. Vesper dares the sloping streets, the sword held out to one side, wings catching the currents, holding her steady. Part gliding, part bounding, she races along, fixed on her destination. Though she is fast, she cannot match Theta of the Seven for speed. The immortal swoops down from some higher place to fly alongside, keeping pace easily. Theta points her sword at Vesper, singing a note of outrage, simple, that launches light, blazing and blue, straight at her. Vesper brings the sword round with a counter-note, splitting the fire, moving through the gap. However, the sword cannot parry and guide at the same time, and Vesper's stride loses momentum. Theta attacks again, forcing another parry, forcing Vesper to abandon herself to the mercy of gravity. She slides down the palace on her back, sword held up, diverting the angry song before it can touch her, while Theta follows, keeping on the pressure, waiting for the opening that will surely come. Vesper slides further down, batting away another strike. Barely, the power of Theta taxing her voice and muscles to their limits. At first, neither notice one of the giant bone legs of Wonderland rising to meet them. Tendrils twitch along the upper half, translucent worms tasting the air, and the cone-shaped head flickers in Vesper's direction, then splits open like a four-fingered hand to snatch her mid-fall, pulling her away and into the air. A second leg lashes out for Theta, a giant spider swatting at a silver fly. The immortal tucks in her wings, corkscrewing to safety. Meanwhile, Vesper dangles from the first limb like a prize in a fair. Above her, the sky stretches in unbroken glory, the sun's glaring down at her like a pair of mismatched, angry eyes. Below, she sees her feet dangling, and past them, the angled floor of the palace and the judder of battlements, half a jaw of wide-spaced teeth, blunt, square. Through them, she catches a view of Wonderland and the ground, far, far beneath. The sword stares at the limb, seeing the essence of the first, whole again, radiating an alien majesty. Vesper ignores its misgivings, too busy trying to catch her breath to worry about the future. Abruptly, the view is snatched away as she is swung back towards the palace, deposited carefully on the side of a building that juts out like a ramp from the tilting streets. "Thank you," she says. There is a sense of being regarded, and then the bone limb retreats, joining the other one as it tries to smash Theta out of the sky. Vesper doesn't wait to see the result. She lowers herself off the side of the building, climbing through an open doorway. From there, the sword leads her on, finding ways deeper into the palace, where the grinding of machinery can be heard, and the heart of the floating fortress beats. Down stairwells and along passageways she goes, all spotless, generously sized. Few venture this deep inside the palace, a series of doors standing between would-be explorers and the inner chambers. Each one is 4 inches thick, heavy slabs without handle or keyhole, and there are many of them. As Vesper approaches, the sword acts as a key, and they spiral open, vanishing into the walls without trace. The last door swishes away to reveal a large chamber, spherical, nearly half a mile across. Most of it is filled by another globe, the light drive that works hard to keep gravity at bay. Walkways line the edges, allowing access to different parts of the great engine. A handful of robed engineers scurry from place to place, their worried faces caught in the glow, ghost-like, scowling. The fact that the palace is leaning does not matter here. Clever gyroscopes keeping the chamber level regardless. But despite this and their best efforts, the engines are struggling. Vesper's arrival soon gets their attention. Though their duties keep them isolated, the engineers know who Vesper is. They know the sword as well, and they have no idea what to do about either of them. Like sheep, they scatter as she approaches, stopping at a safe distance to watch. Nervous. She works her way up until she is running across the top of the engine on a path that ends abrupt like a diving board above a soft glowing star. Once there, she and the sword start to sing. Not the battle song of the seraph that hardens sound into a weapon, but the gentle hum of a parent helping their child to sleep at night. It is a simple 4-note refrain that rises and falls, repeating, calming. In response, the engines cease their groaning, their radiance reducing, their efforts easing. Vesper continues her work, lulling the light drives to sleep. Alpha's Sky Palace stops fighting the pull of Wonderland. As a result, it floats level once more and begins a stately descent into the embrace of the living city. Meanwhile, the armies of Crucible swarm forward, collected by the strange bone limbs of Wonderland. Each one is part of a necrotic transport system, sucking up individuals into the inner workings of the city, transferring them from pipe to pipe until they reach one of the bone limbs already anchored to the palace above and are regurgitated. Many are inserted this way, bolstering the numbers that originally came by skyship and turning the tide of battle. Those less fond of travel by necropipe and those augmented for climbing make their way to the base of the palace, firing ropes or webbing, or in some cases, simply jumping the distance with superhuman prowess. These brave invaders scale the outer walls, hoping to find a way in before the defenders notice them. The vagrant emerges onto one of the battlements, Mazar and Rila close behind. The fighters from Slake overtake them with ease, their curved stilts propelling them forward in bouncing strides. Each one carries a length of cable, coiled, that they unspool over the side, a lifeline for others to climb. While they work, amber eyes take in the situation. Fierce fighting goes on all over the palace, the Empire struggling to hold back the forces of Crucible. As more and more people pour into the palace, the odds move ever in Crucible's favour. But there is another story unfolding above, as four of the seven battle their way towards Wonderland's heart. The bone limbs fight together, orchestrated by the first's will, an unrelenting assault of stabbing and slashing, with each lining up ready to take over as soon as the one before is done. Theta, Eta, and Epsilon match this display of coordination, flying together, each covering the other, alternately flying over and under limbs, lashing out with their swords and song. It is like watching a group hack its way through an angry forest. The going is slow, but there will only be one result. Alpha is more direct. A single swing of his sword takes the head from one of the limbs. Blue flames burn around the wound, tinting green as the infernal essence catches at the stump. Briefly, the limb flails, miserable, before the flames snuff out, something cutting off the flow of essence from the rest of Wonderland. This saves the first from further pain, but leaves the limb to flop, dead and useless. The other nearby limbs hesitate, standing upright, paralyzed snakes that allow Alpha to proceed unhindered. If Alpha can reach inside the shell of the city, he will be able to kill the first, and without Wonderland, the forces of Crucible are lost. The vagrant frowns. He taps Mazar's rifle and then points at Alpha.
"No way," she replies. "You can't ask me to do that. Delta wouldn't want me to."
There is a hint of questioning in her voice, but there is no time for the vagrant to argue. Alpha is diving lower. Soon he will be lost amid the sparkling towers. The vagrant looks at Delta's sword, nods towards Alpha. An eye meets his gaze, frightened but steady, and he takes one of the silver wings in his free hand. Mazar begins shaking her head.
"Don't do it," she urges.
The vagrant releases the wing, kissing the tips of his fingers and touching them to Rila's forehead. She wraps her uninjured arm around his leg, holding tight. Gently, he unpeels it, pushing her away. Clearly, the girl intends to contest the issue, but Mazar drags her back.
"Don't do it," she says again.
The vagrant leans out over the battlements and points Delta's sword at Alpha's back. Both man and sword seem to sag momentarily before straightening. His mouth opens and sharp song comes out, is caught by the blade and focused, making a line of blue fire, streaking. Down it goes, an ethereal comet, straight, unerring, until it strikes Alpha square in the back. At this distance, the song has lost much of its power, more a slap in the face or a flick of an ear than a real attack. Somehow, this is worse. A quick flicker of a wing whirls Alpha round, sky-blue eyes finding the vagrant instantly. Another beat, and he is flying up at them, at speed. The vagrant waves Mazar and Rila back, urging them away with a frantic wave of the hand. They go, though Rila resists, her feet kicking in all directions, heels drumming against Mazar's armor. Satisfied, the vagrant readies himself for Alpha's charge.
As he draws nearer, Alpha levels his blade with the vagrant's chest before giving his response to the challenge. The vagrant's face falls. The eye in Delta's sword widens in fear, and everything between them explodes. Alpha's rebuke reverberates, passing through every corner of the Sky Palace, every part of Wonderland, even reaching Crucible, startling men and goats alike. In the streets of the palace, on its battlements, and in various corridors, infernals, humans, and half-breeds pause, taking a moment to appreciate that they are not the target of the immortal's rage. Delta and Beta cease their argument, curiosity drawing them outside. And in the bowels of the palace, an eye glances up, Vespers following. A curse escapes her lips, and she starts running, despite the knowledge that she is already too late. The vagrant blinks against the dust, rising from his crouch. There is space in front of him where moments before there were battlements. A circular gouge that encompasses a section of floor, allowing new views of the levels below and an uninterrupted view of Alpha's charge. Alpha is only 20 feet away and closing fast. His sword remains focused on the vagrant, a second blast of song coming hot on the heels of the first. The vagrant tries to parry, but it is like blocking a hurricane. Though no flame touches his skin, the force pushes him back until heels hang over the courtyard. Before the vagrant can recover, Alpha attacks a third time, thrusting forward, adding the power of his arms to that of his wings. Delta's sword bravely puts itself between them, wings trembling, eye half closed. If the vagrant does try to augment the parry with song, it is overwhelmed, lost in the roar of fire and rage. The point of Alpha's sword strikes the flat of Delta's, pushing it into the vagrant's chest, punching him into the sky. Like a leaf, he tumbles, head over heels towards the waiting courtyard. He sticks out his arms, instinctive, useless, falling just as fast as before. Delta's sword is slightly more effective, the silvered wings that make the crosspiece stretching wide, using currents of essence to slow their descent. Even so, the landing is an ugly, lopsided, rolling thing. The vagrant comes to a stop, his armor scuffed in every place, his face down, his eyes closed. Above, Alpha circles, building up to something. Blue fire trails from his sword, growing steadily brighter. There are other combatants in the courtyard, but both Crucible and Empire forces clear the area, united in their desire to avoid what's coming. Only one person is going the opposite way. A small figure, cradling one arm, who has finally escaped her captor's grip. She rushes over to the vagrant, kneeling at his side as Alpha completes his second circle. Her arrival catches the attention of Delta, who has been watching for some time. Sympathy crosses her face, and she takes a step forward before Beta's hand finds her shoulder, stopping her. A small silver wing and a small hand nudge the vagrant, eliciting some kind of noise. It is not a word. Not even a grunt, but its meaning is clear. No. Neither girl nor sword respects it, nudging harder. The vagrant looks up, irritation spurring him to consciousness, but fading as the situation presents itself. Alpha makes a third circle, faster, as the vagrant struggles to his feet. The trail of fire grows longer, almost making a hoop as Alpha pulls off with a powerful wingbeat. The vagrant raises Delta's sword, stepping in front of Rila. For a moment, Alpha seems to hang in the air, and then he is turning, diving, his wings folding close to his back, his sword so bright that the air shimmers in fear. Like a meteor heralding the end, he comes down. As Alpha's song grows in strength, Vespa pushes herself to run faster. The sword urges her on, humming with worry. They make a strange sight as they storm along, and people on both sides of the conflict hurl themselves aside rather than get in their way. She bursts out into the open in time to see Alpha's dive. The vagrant is just a shadow underneath it, a stick man with a stick sword with an even smaller shadow behind. Without pausing, Vespa leaps into the air, spinning, singing out. As she completes her turn, the sword points at a space where Alpha will shortly arrive, blasting it with song. Unwittingly, Alpha races to intercept it, his attention so fixed on the vagrant that he doesn't see it coming. She is not strong enough to knock him from the sky or to take away the force of his attack, but she is strong enough to divert it, sending Alpha off at a tangent to crash into a nearby building. The immortal dives straight through the roof, straight through several floors, and a shockwave blasts out, shredding the walls and rippling the floor. What is left collapses, the roof folding in on itself, no longer supported. Vespa skids to a stop at the vagrant's side. He nods to her, one eyebrow cocked. "Are you ready for this?" He nods again, and she knows he is lying. She finds herself smiling anyway. "Me too." Her gaze moves to Rila. "You need to go hide, now." The girl shakes her head. "Rila!" She shakes her head a second time, stepping behind the vagrant. Vespa sees the fear in her girl's face, of the battle, the violence, of her own mother. She tries to soften her expression and reach out to her daughter when the rubble that was once a building blasts into the air and Alpha climbs out. "It didn't have to be this way," she murmurs, making the vagrant turn his head, puzzled. "We take him together, okay?" The vagrant nods. Alpha is upright now, bits of debris falling from his shoulders as he strides towards them. The collision has not marked him, and exertions have taken no toll on his strength. The closer he gets, the more the difference in height is pronounced. "You've lost," says Vespa. "Look around you. The army you sent has surrendered. Your palace has been anchored and is being overwhelmed as we speak. But there's still a chance to save lives. Order the Empire to stop fighting, and I can stop this right now." But there is no relief to be found in Alpha's eyes. It is like asking the mountains for mercy. He continues to advance. Vespa's expression hardens. "The Empire needed you for years. They prayed for you to come, and you ignored them. I know why." She glances over to where Delta stands, Beta's hand still restraining her shoulder. "You were scared." Alpha's sword begins a low, growling hum. "You were scared of the breach, so while generations suffered and your own sister sacrificed herself, you hid in your room. Then you were scared of the yearning. And while good people," her voice chokes for a moment, "sacrificed themselves, you hid in your room. Only now, when the biggest threats have passed, do you decide to come out. And what do? You kill the very people you're supposed to be protecting. And why?" Alpha is nearly within sword reach now, and his blade is already rising to strike, the hum becoming a roar. Vespa carries on, shouting above it. "Because you are scared again! You're scared of what you let happen to the world, and rather than take responsibility for it, you..." Alpha's sword comes down. Two swords meet it, and the collision is thunderous, driving Vespa and the vagrant backwards. The two exchange a look and the briefest of nods before assuming positions of readiness. "And rather than take responsibility for it," Vesper continues. You'd just destroy everything. Because purging is easier than understanding. Because if you get rid of us... She tails off, meeting another of Alpha's attacks, the Vagrant lending his strength to hers. Again, one blade strikes two. Again, they hold fast. If you get rid of us, you don't have to take responsibility for us, or for yourself, or for the ways you failed. I'm asking you again. Surrender! Alpha's answer is immediate, furious, his sword raining down in a series of strikes, each falling like a hammer, heavy and fast, forcing his enemies back. The Vagrant fights well, but he is just a man, and his link with Delta's sword still fragile. Vesper fights well, moving as Gamma would, a match in skill and anger, but she too is mortal, with muscles that tire and a body that is already broken. Moreover, to match Alpha's song, they push themselves. Throats quickly burn, straining, their own efforts ravaging them from within, just as Alpha whittles from without. For a time, Vesper does not have the space to sing and speak, using everything she has just to survive. They are holding Alpha, but they will not be able to do so forever. Something has to change, and quickly, if they are to win. Every time she thinks she sees an opening, Alpha has already closed it. He and his sword read her intentions even as she conceives them. The sword gives her the same advantage, meaning neither side can surprise the other. Gloomily, she realizes that Alpha does not need to do anything but wait. For all her talk, the taking of the palace will mean nothing if the Seven still stand. And if she falls, the alliance with the Infernals falls too, and Crucible will fail. There has to be something I can do. But Alpha's attacks send any possible plans fleeing from her mind, forcing her back and back again, each time a little more weary than before. The Vagrant is getting slower too, his parries only just joining hers in time. She knows that somewhere behind her is her daughter, can only hope that the girl has found a safe place to hide. At the thought of Rila, there is an accompanying surge of guilt. It shouldn't have been this way for her. This is my fault. Something pricks her finger, and she looks over to see that the sword has stabbed her with a wingtip. It is telling her to focus. More than that, it is telling her to attack. As Alpha's blade comes down, she steps aside instead of meeting it, letting the Vagrant face it alone. She hears the ring of sword on sword, but without her aid he is overwhelmed, blasted backwards, tumbling out of her periphery. She has got an opening, but has abandoned her father to get it. Another sacrifice, she thinks. Another betrayal. The sword does not give her the luxury of remorse, driving her forward. Somehow the idea that she would dare to attack surprises Alpha. He is already wrong-footed, preparing to strike again in the place where Vesper was. He manages a clumsy parry, her sword sparking off his blade, and then a second time against his shoulder. Before he can recover, she presses her advantage, alternating high and low, striking quickly, feinting. An anger fuels her, giving her much-needed strength. Vesper is not sure how much of it is hers and how much the sword's, but she doesn't care, happy to use it regardless. Stumbling away, Alpha does all he can to keep the sword from biting him. His own weapon races to put itself between him and danger. On his back, wings flick out, stabilizing, then sweep in turn, trying to buffet Vesper, break her flow. And she is buffeted, but she does not fight it, allowing the sideways momentum to add to her slice, breaking Alpha's guard and drawing a dark line across his silver chest. On the one hand, the injury is minor, more cosmetic than anything else. On the other, it is historic, massive, a spoiling of perfection. Alpha is no longer quite as the Creator made him. An eye blinks in surprise, staring at the mark it has made, and a feeling of wrongness locks Vesper into place. Alpha swings out, bellowing with a wild rage even the sword is not ready for, blowing out the candle of Vesper's resistance. The flat of his blade catches her in the ribs, making several crack, and she somersaults backward, a limp-limbed gymnast that fails to plant her landing.